Chapter 24. Alan King jacked himself upright and craned to his left. He took a good long look at the fuel gauge. He said, "I think we'll be okay for a spell more. Let me know when it hits the three-quarter mark."
"Won't be long," Reacher said. "It seems to be going down awful fast."
"That's because you're driving awful fast."
"No faster than Mr. McQueen was."
"Then maybe the fault has corrected itself. Maybe it was only intermittent."
"We don't want to run out of gas, not out here. It's pretty lonely. Can't count on getting help. The cops are all back at that roadblock."
"Give it another 30 minutes, King said. "Then perhaps we'll start to think about it."
"Okay," Reacher said.
"Tell me about that thing with the letter A."
"Later."
"No, now."
"I said later. What part of that is hard to understand?"
"You don't like to be pushed around, do you, Mr. Reacher?"
"I don't know. I've never been pushed around. If it ever happens, you'll be the first to find out whether I like it or not."
King turned his head away and gazed forward into the darkness for a full minute more, completely silent, and then he slid down in his seat and tucked his chin back down and closed his eyes again. Reacher checked the mirror. McQueen was still out cold. Del Fuenzo was still awake. And she was blinking again. Backward 7, forward 8, forward 5, backward 2. THEY, they. Forward 8, forward 1, backward 5, forward 5. HAVE, have. Forward 7, backward 6, backward 13, backward 8. GUNS, guns. They have guns. Reacher nodded in the mirror and drove on. The scene behind the cocktail lounge stayed quiet for 5 more minutes. The lab guys took a long sequence of close-up photographs inside the Mazda using strobes. The car's misty glass lit up from within with irregular flashes, like a thunderstorm viewed from a great distance or a battle on the other side of a hill. Goodman's deputies searched the ground and found nothing of significance. Sorensen interrogated federal and state databases by phone, looking for large men with recent facial injuries. She came up empty. Then came the sounds of a whispering V8 engine and tires on crushed stone, and the dip and bounce of headlight beams in the mist, and a dark sedan nosed its way north towards them. It was a navy blue Crown Vic, identical to Sorensen's own, same specifications, same needle antennas on the back deck, but with Missouri plates. It came to a stop at a respectful distance, and 2 men got out. They were wearing dark suits. They stood in the lee of their open doors and struggled into heavy down parkas. Then they closed their doors and moved closer, scanning the scene as they walked, noticing and dismissing the county deputies, noticing and dismissing Sheriff Goodman, noticing and dismissing the crime scene technicians, before settling their attention on Sorensen. They stopped 6 feet from her and pulled IDs from their pockets. The same IDs as hers. FBI. The agent on the right said,
"We're from counterterrorism, central region, out of Kansas City."
Sorensen said,
"I didn't call you."
"Your field office's duty log triggered an automatic alert."
"Why?"
"Because the crime scene location is sensitive."
"Is it? It's an abandoned pumping station."
"No, it's an open and uncapped wellhead with direct vertical access to the largest groundwater reserves in the United States."
"It's a dry hole."
The guy nodded. "But only because the water table fell below the bottom of the bore. Dry or not, if you poured something down that pipe, it would find its way into the aquifer. That's inevitable. Gravity alone would make sure of it, like dripping ink on a sponge."
"Poured what?"
"There's a number of things we wouldn't want to go down there."
"But it would be a drop in a bucket. Literally. A very tiny drop and a very big bucket. I mean, there's a lot down there. They use 2.5 trillion gallons every year. And even one of those big road tankers is what, 5,000 gallons? That's nothing in comparison."
The guy nodded again. "But terrorism is an asymmetrical business. As a matter of fact, you're right. 5,000 gallons of poisonous chemicals or viruses or germs or whatever wouldn't do much harm, not scientifically. But can you see a way of convincing people of that? There'd be mass panic. There'd be a mass stampede out of here. Total chaos throughout a large part of the nation. And that's exactly what terrorists like. Plus, we'd have severe disruption to agriculture for years, and there are military installations here.
Are you serious? That's chemical and biological warfare.
We're completely serious.
So why hasn't that pipe been capped?
There are 10,000 holes like that one. We're working as fast as we can.
Sorensen said,
This is a homicide. I don't see a terrorist angle.
Really? Did you get a call from State about the victim?
Yes.
And CIA?
Yes.
So there's some kind of overseas issue here, don't you think?
Sorensen heard her technician's voice in her head.
I would say the shirt was bought in Pakistan or possibly the Middle East.
She said,
So are you taking over from me?
The guy on the right shook his head and said,
No, it's still your case, but we're going to be looking over your shoulder. Night and day, just until we're sure. Nothing personal. We hope you don't mind.
Reacher heard McQueen wake up behind him. He looked in the mirror and saw the guy staring out his window at the empty traffic lanes alongside him. Then he saw him look the other way, beyond Del Fuenzo at the shoulder of the road. They passed an exit sign. They passed three blue boards, one of them blank. Gas and accommodations, but no food. There were no lights on the horizon, no welcoming glow. A deceptive exit, in Reacher's opinion. 15 or 20 miles of dark rural roads, and then places that would be shut when they finally got there.
Take this one, McQueen said.
What?
Reacher said. Exit here. You sure? Looks pretty dead. Just do it.
Reacher glanced sideways at Alan King. McQueen saw him do it. McQueen said,
Don't look at him. He's not in charge here. I am. And I'm telling you to take this exit.